Welcome to episode number 129 of the Big Web Show, Everything Web That Matters. I'm your host, Jeffrey Zeldman. Today's show is sponsored by DreamHost and An Event Apart. And today's guest is Jessica Alter, co-founder and chief connector of founderdating.com. Jessica, welcome.
Thanks, Jeffrey. Great to be here.
For those who don't know, what's the mission of founderdating.com? What is founder dating?
Well, it's not romantic, just to...
Okay. So you're regretting the name?
No, I'm not regretting the name. I just think okay. When people hear it initially, they think, oh my God, what's that? Which is good. But it's not romantic, at least in the typical romantic sense. We're LinkedIn for entrepreneurs. So how entrepreneurs at all stages can get access to the best people and what we say is experiential information, the resources that they need. That could be a co-founder at the very beginning. That could be an advisor in the middle. That could be just a community of entrepreneurs to talk to, network with, et cetera. And the mission is really, how do we help entrepreneurs do the things that they really want to do faster and more successfully?
So if I have an idea for a business, just an idea, would I join Founder Dating and start looking for a co-founder?
Yeah, absolutely. So anyone can join the network. We keep parts of the network curated, so which the community actually really appreciates and loves. So if you want to be an advisor, you need to be sort of blessed. And the same thing with a co-founder. We actually hand screen co-founders and keep that part of the network 50% engineering. But yeah, I think that probably 6 to 12 months before you have the idea, you should probably look for a co-founder. One of the biggest mistakes we see people make is that they think of co-founder as something they do at the end, or, well, once I figure it all out, then I'll look for a co-founder. And that's really sort of the opposite of what we've seen work. Most ideas change, and I'm sure, Jeffrey, you can attest to that many times over. Most ideas change either completely or at least in some small form. So, you know, our big thing is fall in love with the person, not necessarily just the idea.
This is all really great stuff already. I can't imagine, though, that mistake. That seems odd to me. Like, if I had figured everything out myself and can figure it out, why do I want to share it with a co-founder? It's like, it's like I want someone to help me. I'm confused and I think I have an idea, or maybe you have a better idea. Right. But not. Yeah.
Yeah. So, well, I think you benefit from years of experience and you know, helpful scar tissue. And
yes, thank you. How did you know? You've seen it?
Yes.
You've seen my Instagram. Yeah.
And so I think it's easy to say that you know, but it's like you don't know what you don't know, and that's the biggest challenge. I would just add, you know, you can join when you want a co-founder, when you have an idea, or when you just are working on a side project. We're actually doing a whole talk around the world right now called From Side Project to Company, because so many people have side projects. But you can also join when you need an advisor, or you're well into the entrepreneurial experience and or spectrum, as we call it, and you know, want to talk with other entrepreneurs. We have a huge really Q&A platform that's super, super active. That's everything from, you know, should designers code, much more like sort of high level esoteric stuff. And also, you know, what kinds of CRMs are the best for startups. And it's extremely engaged. Our users are really, really into helping each other. And I think you get answers fast and in a very quality way. So
is that through the blog, or is that through your network discussion?
No, through the network. Yeah. The blog is, you know, the blog, and it's awesome. But it's called Founder Dating Discuss. And so there's a, it's sort of the way I describe it is if Quora and Reddit had an entrepreneurial love child. So it's high quality like Quora, but it's not, but there is discussion back and forth between people. It's not, you know, it's not anonymous or even somewhat anonymous. And it is high quality, but it's not just essays like this is what I would do. There is discussion back and forth. And obviously then you can reach out to people one-on-one.
Is there, do you have to is there a certain level of qualification you have to make in order to be part of the network?
Not anymore. We started out that way. And then now anyone's able to join the network and be a part of it.
Why did you start that way and why did you stop? I'm curious.
Well, so we started that way initially because we really wanted to focus on quality, and we still do. But eventually you sort of have to open up and give away some of that control. But I think the big thing at the beginning is we're a people network. So it's, you know, how do you access the best people? And we wanted to make it about the people, and we wanted to seed a great community. So I think with a lot of businesses right now, it's not necessarily just about the software. It's about, you know, what the community is about. And in my background, I had been a part of a lot of different communities and or seen them. And, you know, what I noticed is like, it's not typically about the software. So the example I'd give is like, I don't know if you remember Chat Roulette. It was sort of a video software, like, you know, chat with anybody community, and it was cool software. That wasn't the problem. It just like all of a sudden had the wrong people there, and you saw things that like you didn't want to see, or maybe you did, but you know, you couldn't talk about. So we really wanted to seed an awesome community.
I think South Park did a whole episode on that where it was all middle-aged men.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
So it's just really important to us. The people are really the most important thing. And I would say we still do curate, as I said, pieces of it. So the co-founder network, we have about 30 ambassadors. We call them managing directors around the world. They're still actually going through and looking at everyone who wants to be a co-founder. So that part of the network is actually still curated, and we keep it 50% engineers. And then to be an advisor,
why is that?
Same reason. We want to keep the quality high, and we want to keep the skill sets balanced. Because I think most of the companies are tech or tech enabled, and I think that's becoming a bigger and bigger area, tech enabled, right? Like, I don't know if you've seen like Lux Valet. It's a valet company, but they have an app, and it's not really a tech company. It's like a logistics company, but so they're tech enabled. But I think more and more people want to see that that there's you know, the ability to connect with engineers, and I should say it's not only software engineers by any stretch of the imagination. There's tons and tons of hardware, electrical, mechanical, you know, biomedical. But we want to keep some of the skill sets balanced.
Okay, so this isn't just for web apps. This isn't just
for
the next camera app. Yeah, okay. This is for
not at all
medical imaging or whatever.
Yeah, in fact, I think one of our biggest growing sort of areas of interest are all in the hardware space, whether that's wearables or smart home or anything like that. And I think also the idea of web or mobile apps, as I said, has really expanded. Like, there are certainly apps that are very technical, and certainly people that are that want to build extremely technical things on their, you know, businesses. But a lot of companies now are really tech enabled. And we're seeing that more and more, and everyone's seeing that more and more.
How about design and designers?
Yeah. I'm glad you said that. So design has been a big thing, for me and for us for a while. I wrote an article, I think I sent to you a while ago in Wired, maybe a year ago, a year and a half ago, called, Why Aren't There More Designer Entrepreneurs? So we looked at our numbers, and just the people that wanted to be in the co-founder portion of the network that claimed that they were designers, that could be industrial, could be UI, et cetera. And it's just pretty low. You know, I would say around, if you correct for people who are actually good at design, not just like, oh, I'm this dev and I'm a design appreciator. A design appreciator, but I'm not a UI designer.
Right.
I think it's closer to like 10%, which is really low. So we definitely want designers, and people want designers. We don't have a quota for them because I don't know if that's the smartest way to do it. But I mean, when you come on to founder dating, and if you're looking for a co-founder, you can look by primary skill set. So you can say, like, I want someone UI design. I want someone who's engineering. I want someone who's business development, sales, fundraising, etc. So it's certainly a big part of the network. Also, actually, one of the most requested areas for advisors is user interface design. I think it's 5 or 6. And so we have a lot of people around that.
So a designer that's looking to become entrepreneurial doesn't necessarily have to join founder dating because they have an idea. They might not have an idea, but be willing to work on something.
Founder dating wouldn't work if everyone had an idea that they were just extremely attached to. And I would say most people are what we call idea butts. Like, I have an idea, but I'm open to other ideas, which is great because I think that works. And a lot of times, you know, people are at different levels of attachment. But as I said at the beginning, and you sort of echoed this, like, why would you wait till you had an idea? It would be like waiting to get married, when you're ready to get pregnant. It's like you learn so much when you work on side projects with people or, start to talk to people, not only about them, but actually about what you want. I mean, I think people tend to think like, oh, this is just like finding like a colleague. And, you know, it's just such a different kind of relationship when you're looking for a co-founder, that I think it's important to give yourself like ample time. And the same thing with an advisor. I think people tend to rush into that a little bit. They're like, oh, shoot, we don't understand SEO. We need someone. And while I think that it's not quite as serious as a co-founding relationship, you do need to make sure that, like, you really want to work with this person, you know, once a week or once every other week. And just to clarify what I mean by advisor for people to understand, this is not a consultant. This is someone who you're meeting with on some regular basis, that's helping you with all or some parts of your business. And usually after a couple meetings, you'll work out some equity agreement. We on our site have templatized that with Gunderson and Oric to make that easy. You don't have to use it, but it certainly makes things much easier, and you don't need to pay a lawyer. And I think, you know, it's really easy to find people with the right skill sets. It's much harder to find that right fit. And that's true like across the board. But, you know, you should look for that with an advisor too. These are still people you have to work with for years.
What if I don't like my advisor or co-founder? What if our relationship takes a weird turn? If I thought someone was stalking me or made jokes that I didn't appreciate or whatever, what do you do about something like that if you're...
I think it's a case by case basis. It sort of depends on like how much you don't like it, because obviously there's always going to be little things that you don't like.
Sure.
If it's really detrimental and you can't stand it, it's part of your business, you have to do something, and it's not that hard to extricate an advisor.
Co-founder though?
Yeah, I think co-founder. That's a little bit of a more serious, extrication, if you will. And you really need to think about like what is bothering you. Is it a deal breaker? And, you know, what is sort of going to happen to your child, which is the company? If you haven't gotten that far and you haven't launched anything, or, you know, you don't have customers, or you haven't taken money, then, you know, I would say if you've decided that, then you've just learned something and you should extricate yourself pretty immediately. I would also say that is why you should start early, because you don't want to just start working with someone, you know, take other people's money and then realize that, you know, that's not the right person for you.
Does founder dating benefit from the products its members create?
Yeah. I mean, I think one of the biggest surprises for me, even though what I'm about to say is going to sound extremely obvious, one of the biggest surprises for me is how much people want to be just part of an entrepreneurial community whether that means that they, you know, are looking for an advisor, or they're advising, or actually they're just part of a community where they can talk to people and ask questions, etc. So we benefit in that we use it. Like, I'll use it to talk to people or ask questions, or you know, look for advisors, etc. We don't benefit like in a monetary way.
That's what I was getting at.
If I
hooked up with an engineer and an advisor, and
no, we don't get in the way of that.
Okay,
not right now. Okay. We don't get in the way of that. To join the co-founder network, if you're invited to the co-founder network, there's a $50 a year subscription, which is, I don't know, it's insanely nominal. Like, if you want to put an ad on Craigslist, it's $75. So, right. And we're curated. So, it's insanely nominal, but, there's no plans to get in the middle of like the equity of that. I think there's other ways. We know that there's a lot of good ways to monetize, but we've just been super focused on how do we grow and a very engaged and relevant entrepreneurial community. So
have you had any missteps along the way? I mean, everybody has missteps when they start.
Yeah, we've had tons of, everyone has missteps.
What's your favorite
misstep?
Not just
when they start. We have, you know, everybody has missteps all along the way.
What's your favorite misstep? What did you learn from it?
Oh, wow. What's our favorite misstep? I think for me, I'm an extremely, like, I'm very, very, very focused. And I don't know if this was a misstep. I think this was a misstep in my prior, in a prior company. So I think there's a bigger focus on like culture and doing team things and, you know, having fun with people. Cause I tend to get very focused and, you know, look at what is ahead of me and just want to work. And I think we have a very hardworking culture, but you know, we can also like joke around with people and, you know, grab lunch and do all that stuff. I think that just thinking about like a goal and a number can be detrimental.
Is there a space? Are you contemplating having spaces in certain cities where maybe people could get together, you know, people who've been working virtually together through your network can actually get together and make presentations or?
Yeah. So as part of the co-founder portion of Founder Dating, which actually isn't the majority anymore, but as part of the co-founder network, we actually do hold quarterly, what we call kickoffs in about 12 cities around the world. And that actually spans from Tel Aviv and London to New York to San Francisco. We don't give presentations because we're really focused on people meeting people, not people meeting ideas. So we do that around the world. So we probably have, you know, 60 plus kickoff events a year. And we're also bringing people together with partners right now around different events. Like I said, from side project to company, we just did that with General Assembly yesterday in New York. And there's other stuff that we're doing there. But we're not focused on...
So you work with General Assembly and anyone else in that space?
We're not... no one that comes to mind right now, but we're not focused on like... creating a space necessarily. Okay. Like we think that there are great spaces and more popping up and we're huge fans of that, but we ourselves are not going to create a space, if that makes sense. So we want to bring people together. We want to give them the opportunity to find each other. But we're not, just to answer the question directly, we're not focused on like, having more hackathons or, big co-working spaces or anything like that, because we just feel like the thing that we're really, really good at is the people part. And we don't want to get distracted with, you know, building out spaces and stuff like that. And there's people that are good at that. And that's awesome. But I think the biggest thing that I've learned in running a business is prioritizing. And people will often say to me like, oh, why don't you do this? And I said, well, what should we not do when we do that? Because everything you do means you're not doing something else.
Right. It's like a budget.
Yeah, it is.
It's like, okay, we can spend all the money on clothes, so we won't have food.
Right.
Right.
Exactly.
You get a glass of water. I have to thank one of our sponsors.
Sure.
Okay. Oh, you don't actually get a glass of water. I don't know. I was just making a friendly suggestion. Sorry. At this time, I would like to thank DreamHost. Since 1997, DreamHost has helped entrepreneurs and developers the world over bring their dreams to life on the internet. DreamHost offers domain registrations, web hosting, and even powerful cloud storage and computing services. There are 1.5 million plus websites, WordPress blogs, and applications hosted by DreamHost. That's a lot. There are more than 400,000 customers spanning throughout 100 plus countries. And those folks trust DreamHost to be their online home. DreamHost is a great place to launch a blog, website, or web application into the stratosphere. They're home to over 750,000 WordPress installations and have a helpful staff full of WordPress experts to help if you run into trouble with your WordPress installation. DreamHost is the proud winner of PC Magazine's Business Choice Award for Best Web Hosting Service and has been a recommended hosting solution by WordPress since 2005. And DreamHost is giving the listeners of this show a very special offer. Visit dreamhost.com to sign up and use the code TheBigWebShow395. That's a bunch of words jammed together followed by a 3-digit numeral number, TheBigWebShow395. Use that code, TheBigWebShow395, at checkout at dreamhost.com and you'll get top-rated web hosting for just $3.95 a month, plus a free domain name. So thank you to DreamHost for supporting 5x5 and The Big Web Show. And we are back speaking with the co-founder, Jessica Alter, of founderdating.com, which is not a dating service, but a matchmaker for would-be entrepreneurs. Let's talk a little bit more about the service.
Sure. It's not just for would-be entrepreneurs. There's tons of people that have raised, you know, Series B that are on there looking for advisors and talking to each other. So
that's a very good correction. Right. There's lots of experienced entrepreneurs on the list, as well as people who just have an idea or people who'd like to get involved. Designers,
developers. And it's not just for finding co-founders. It's I think advisors is actually the biggest portion of our network now. And there's a huge, as I said, community talking to each other, both one-on-one and in our Q&A platform, which is called Founder Dating Discuss.
Let's say that a celebrity advisor joins, because lot have. Mm-hmm. Is there a problem where maybe everyone's vying for the same celebrity advisor and other really good advisors who aren't as well known or like, you know, home alone on a Friday night weeping quietly?
Advisors can have some control over like who gets to message them. So they can, you know, have the ability to change that. But I think what people are mostly looking for is the best matches. So there's a lot of search criteria that people can use on our site. So it's really the only place on earth that I know of that you can search by like expert area. So the advisors say what they want to advise on and people are searching on that. Then you can add to that layer in, you know, the markets of interest. So I would say, okay, who's amazing at design thinking? And then I would say the markets of interest that I want them to be interested in are consumer electronics and commerce. And then, you know, further to that, I could do it by city if that matters to you. Most people don't care where their advisors are. Or I could, search by employer or school or affiliation. So I think we let people have a level of granularity with the search that really means that they're much more interested in, frankly, much more able to make sort of the meaningful connections. So I think like if you get an advisor request or something on like LinkedIn, it's sort of like, oh, like this is what we do. Are you interested? And there's no reason for you to reach out. There's no real like reason. And with founder dating, you can see like, oh, this person is interested in blah, blah, blah. That's what we need. And, they're amazing at user interface design. And that's sort of the expert area we're really, really looking for someone to help us with. So that when someone gets a message, the users are able to say to them, hi, you know, I saw your profile, you're an expert in X and you're interested in Y. And, you know, we also have these people in common. I'd love to talk. It's just a much more relevant message and experience.
Yeah, I can. You also let users save their search. So I could look for fundraising in the people who are good at fundraising for apps about dating in the greater New York City area or wherever. Right. And get a list of people and then write them the kind of targeted message that actually might get a response.
Right. Exactly. And so, I think that, and you can see like who you know in common, and it's just it's a much more interesting and relevant way to do it. And, you know, we make it easy for people to politely say no. And also for people to say yes. So, I think one of the things that drives me crazy on a lot of networks is like, I'll get an email that someone sent me a message, but then I have to like log in.
Yes.
And we actually let you just respond via email. It still happens through our system, and so the emails aren't necessarily exposed until you want them to be, but, you can just respond super easily and quickly, because what we care about is people being responsive. I don't really care if you logged in to do it.
You're not selling ads. So you're not looking for eyeballs and,
We're looking for engagement.
Right. You're looking for engagement. You're not just trying to trick people back to the website to find the message. My bank does that, which is great.
Yeah,
and it might be like, and it might be when
Comcast
I get there, someone put a dollar in your account. You ask to be notified if there's a deposit, but all they say is there's an important message. Anti-user patterns. So you, when I look at the way you've created founderdating.com, the two models that come to mind that I think you guys have learned from in your design, one is obviously LinkedIn, but the other is dating sites, right?
Yeah.
Because you can, I'm looking for someone 7 feet tall, who's Chinese and likes to read French novels in the Poughkeepsie area. I mean, you can do that same stuff, and there's obviously ways to politely, just like in a dating site, or so I've read, to politely, you know, disengage if you're not interested.
Yeah. What? I think the, certainly we learn from all kinds of different sites, but sure, we've learned from dating sites in the sense that, you know, people often are, or at least think they are looking for something very specific. And there's certainly a dynamic there where, and I think this is actually the biggest piece where you're, two things. One, there's a first message sent is like the hardest thing, and sort of takes the most guts, which is why Tinder and, you know, Hinge and all them are doing well on the dating scene, because you don't have to actually send a message. Your first step to communicate is just swiping. And the second is, you know, we're really an online to offline, community. So we want people to eventually get off the service, not completely, but to off the service and talk on the phone and meet in person if you're in the same city and do that. So
like a meetup organization, they don't want people to just spend their time on the website. They want them to actually meet up.
Right. And the same with dating sites, right? I mean, like people don't want, you know, people to just be talking on their site. They want them to go on dates. I mean, that's how people have good experiences and want to come back. If I was just talking to people, then I'd be like a chat service. So I think, you know, it's an online to offline kind of experience. And we certainly learn from that. We do learn from LinkedIn for sure. And there's some things that they're great at. They're not great for entrepreneurs. You know, I think we also heed a lot of the things that they do. I'll give you a, for instance, we, have been hugely successful, and I don't know if any of listeners have ever worked with a online community or built one, I think you'll know how hard it is. It's insanely difficult to do in a quality way. And in my prior life, I led a lot of the product and biz dev at a social network called Bebo. So I really grew up in social networking and community. And so it's super hard. And I think if you look at like LinkedIn groups, for instance, they've sort of just gone to the wolves. I mean, it's really like not useful.
Facebook groups.
Although I think Facebook groups are better. They typically tend to be much smaller for whatever reason. So they can be better. They sort of usually, I think, use their useful life pretty quickly. But LinkedIn groups are just mostly spam.
That's what I was going to say. With both, Facebook, it's not exactly spam, but if someone thought I would be interested in, you know, design Tel Aviv and sign me up, let's say, and I wasn't interested, I'll still get message after message about it, and I'll get it in my calendar, and I'm like, and I'll get a thing like, you know, are you going to such and such? Are you going to so and so design thing? And there's not enough information for me to even know what city it is, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm constantly saying no to things that I might have said yes to had I had more information. So it's really tricky when you try to reach into people's calendars and all that to not be spammy and not be intrusive, to not overwhelm them and burn them out, but also to give them enough information that they can act on it if they want to. This is very tricky. When you guys started, how I first became aware of you was one of my, he's been a guest on the show too, one of my friends and business associates, Jared Spool. You know, he signed up and said, would you write something about me? And I did. And the next thing I knew, like seven other people had asked me to write for them. So I sort of backed off. I pulled back. I said, like, wow, this could be my full-time job writing recommendations for people. And then it stopped. And I'm still a member.
Right.
So you guys did something. I'm not sure what.
Well, I think maybe people saw that you wrote something for him. But we call them vouch. And it's actually a huge part of the system because when we curate both by hand and in an automated way, we really look at who vouched for you and what they said. And then members obviously want to see who vouched for you and what they said, or if you can't get someone to vouch for you, like, what does that mean? And it's really a different kind of question that we ask, which is like, you know, is this person a great advisor and why, or is this person a great entrepreneur and why, or will they be? So I think that that's like, a really big part of it. But yeah, and you can also turn off, we give a lot of granularity in emails that you get.
I might have decided that I wanted to pull back and actually used some technology you provided or some design options you provided that allowed me to get less information, but more relevant. Yeah.
Yeah, certainly that's possible. So that could certainly be it. But yeah, I think that the vouching system is really about like what other people want to see about you. I mean, you can imagine if you're looking at someone that you want to talk to, an advisor or a co-founder or just another entrepreneur, you really do want to see what other people have said about them and who those people are, right? I mean, that's
sure.
That's actually hugely important. It's actually sort of missing from dating sites, but hugely important.
No, actually, it's present in Google, or you don't see it, but Google, you know, Google ranking is like, if this high ranked site ranked this other site well, and five high ranked sites ranked this site well, then it goes up in the rankings. And do you have algorithms like that where if, you know, several successful or impressive or connected people, I don't know what words to use, and they all sound horrible. It sounds like, but you know what I'm saying? If five or six successful entrepreneurs wrote about a particular person, does that make them more likely to be found by someone seeking an advisor? Is there that kind of ranking when you said you do some
curation electronically? We certainly have built a way to understand like who's vouching for you, but because part of what's involved with like who you see is what you're looking for. So there's a lot of different things that go in. It's not just sort of a ranking of that. But yeah, we actually tell people like, you know, focus on getting people that are entrepreneurs or understand entrepreneurship to vouch for you. Because obviously that is what other people want to see more. And obviously they, you know, they have a more interesting insight into why you are or why you'd be a great entrepreneur, but we don't necessarily rank them like that for you and let you necessarily see that, but there's magic sort of behind the scenes.
Cool. Now, Uber famously wrote bad recommendations for Lyft software, right, in the iTunes store. And those are still in the iTunes store. If you go to, you know, if you have a bad experience with Uber and you're thinking of trying Lyft, you're likely to be discouraged from even trying it because there are so many one-star reviews, which quite possibly were not written by actual users, but might have been written by folks hired by Uber. How do you, and I've been doing bulletin boards. Like, I go back to bulletin boards for social media myself. So it's so easy to game things. It's so easy for someone to be nominated designer of the year because they ask all their friends to write in and nominate them. And do you know what I'm saying? There's lots of stuff like that. So how do you guard
for
that?
So I think a couple of things. One is just incentives. So obviously Uber has some incentive to write bad reviews about Lyft. People don't actually have really incentives.
But what about good reviews? But I might have if I wanted Wikipedia to make me seem like I wanted to make my Wikipedia profile more awesome, I might say, everyone listening to this show, please add something awesome about me to my Wikipedia profile, right? And in that way, try to game the system. They're probably figured out.
I don't know Wikipedia's editing system, but I think anonymity is a big part of it. So you can't leave an anonymous vouch. It's not possible. And this is part of the reason why. I think people care about what someone says, but they also care who's saying it and what their background is. And then that's on your profile as well. So you should really, you know, you really think twice about what you're saying about the person. It's something that you'll be attached to and people will see that you did it. So I think that actually removes a lot of the issues that you're talking about, because, you know, when someone says to me, hey, will you give me a recommendation to this person for a job? I'll say to myself, you know, I really like you. But is this someone that I want to like put my name on the line for, right? Yeah. Is this someone that I want this other person to know that I recommended? And so I think once your name is associated with something, and the same with, you know,
you've never written a mercy or a pity recommendation.
I mean, I'm sure there's been some, but I think that's the edge case. You know, I think that most people don't want their name associated with someone that they're not excited about or had a great experience with. And, you know, we tell people all the time in customer service, they're like, well, I don't, you know, I haven't talked to this person in a while or blah, blah, blah. Then we'll say like, yeah, don't write one then. But I also think, you know, in founder dating discuss, and there's a lot about anonymity right now out there in the marketplace. We don't allow anonymity. I think it has a place, and it's certainly intellectually interesting. But you know, for our network, it's really all about being very real and, you know, talking about what we call sticking points. Whether that's, you know, what CRM system should I use, or I need an advisor, or you know, my co-founder relationship is going south. We want people to be real, and that means knowing who they are.
That's great. I need to take one more quick break to thank another sponsor. Hang in just for a second. Sure. Today's Big Web Show is also sponsored by An Event Apart, the design conference for people who make websites. Coming May 11th to May 13th, An Event Apart Boston is an intensely educational learning session for passionate practitioners of standards-based web design. If you care about code as well as content, usability as well as design, An Event Apart is the conference for you. See John Hicks, author of the Icon Handbook, explain the icon design process. Design for social behavior with Sarah Parmenter. Develop smaller, faster websites with Matt Marquis. Learn CSS grid layout with Rachel Andrew. Atomic design with Brad Frost. SVG techniques with Chris Coyer. And responsive design from its inventor, Ethan Marcotte, plus many more. Learn more and check the complete schedule for An Event Apart Boston at aneventapart.com. And hey, Big Web Show fans, save $100 on An Event Apart Boston in May or on any 2 or 3 day An Event Apart event this year with discount code AEABWS for Big Web Show. That's AEABWS, AEA Big Web Show, AEABWS for $100 off any an Avetta Park Boston or any AEA 2 or 3 day show in 2015 at aneventapart.com. And we are back with Jessica. Jessica, you got a BBA, Business Administration, from University of Michigan, which is a great school, and an MBA from Harvard.
Yes.
And
both those things are true.
And you have been using the internet how long in your life?
Oh, God. I remember, I remember dialing up and using AOL. So,
which you sold to one of your companies to?
Not my company, but a company that I was early at. Yeah.
Bebo.
Yeah. Yeah.
Harvard, how did you come to be associated with the internet and startups? What was your path from Harvard to what you're doing now?
The path from Harvard to what I was doing now, I think, ironically, I was in college in like 99, 2000, sort of during Web 1.0, and I kind of had no idea what was going on. And I don't consider myself naive or dumb. So I just didn't really know that much about what was going on. And obviously, even in Web 1.0, like, there was not social media. So I think the proliferation of information was still was much different.
There were discussion boards. So a lot of the basics about, like, there were trolls just like there are now, and there was spamming and all that stuff. It just took more skill to do it.
Yeah. And you weren't on your phone looking at it all the time either.
For sure.
Yeah. So, I think I went into sort of a more expected career. And then after business school, or actually before even, I knew I wasn't ever really a huge fan of rules I just really like to get stuff done. And so after business school, I came out here. I actually worked at another company right before Bebo that was mobile gaming. I like to say before mobile or gaming was big. that didn't work out, but I ended up quickly at Bebo, and we, had a fun mercurial ride. And I knew pretty much right away that I wanted to start something because I just love I actually love sort of controlled chaos of a startup in the beginning of it and what's possible. Mm-hmm. And I think you trade off between the really high highs and really low lows and sort of, working at a big company and sort of flatlining. And that was reinforced when we got acquired by AOL. I worked at AOL for a year, and lovely, lovely time. But I found myself, and I remember in my sort of quote unquote exit interview, it was sort of like, what can we do to make you stay? And I started saying, every time I try to do something, the person who I'm actually still good friends with said, oh, there's someone telling you you can't. And I was like, no, there's 10 people telling you you can't. and that's just not, I think I spent 80% of my trying to stop bad things from happening and 20% making good things happen. And I think in a startup that's flipped. And so that's what I love about startups is like you can do them. That said, and I know that our company enables this, I think, starting side projects and companies has never been more possible. And I use the word possible and not easy because it's still really hard to start a company. And I think people, because the tools, from AWS and Rackspace to Shopify and Twilio have become just so much better, cheaper, and easier to use. It's easier. People see all these crowdfunding campaigns and they see, it's possible to get to your first set of customers. People are much more savvy about it. And it feels sometimes easy. And it's not easy to start a company. And I think that's an important message that people need to understand. And that's not a discouragement. It's just understanding that I actually think the hardest thing about starting a company, and this is sort of the Ben Horowitz line of thinking, is it's the emotional stuff. You know, there's always people that want to help you. And what we've really done is created, is really helping democratize access to the right people and experiential information. But there's an emotional piece of starting a company and the ups and downs in that. And when you find a partner, an advisor, or they're just part of a community, you know, that's something you should think about, is like, who's going to be there? You know, who's going to be sort of my support system around that. So I digress a little bit, but I think that's super, super important. And after Bevo, after AOL, I started a company called Formative Labs that didn't go anywhere, sort of started founder dating as my side project. And then once I got more headspace, I realized with Sargar, who's now a VC at Charles River Ventures. And we started as a side project initially, just thinking, oh, this is a great thing for San Francisco. And then realized that it wasn't just San Francisco and it wasn't just co-founders, and a lot of the macro factors had changed. So I think the stuff I just mentioned, the sort of architecture, the guts of building something to get up there and build an MVP. You know, 10 years ago, if you wanted to build an e-commerce site, you needed $10 million for the servers. Mm-hmm. Now you like open an AWS account and Shopify and you're ready to go. And, you know, people are much more savvy about getting to a first set of customers, whether that's because they understand Facebook ads and AdWords or social media. People are much more savvy at the fundraising side of it. You need less money and there's more ways to get it and more ways proliferating. So all that stuff has become much more possible. And what it exacerbates is that the people side of things and getting experiential information from people who have done it before, have done similar things, is even more important. It was always important, but it's even more important now because all the other stuff has become just much more possible. So that's what we realized. And, you know, certainly wouldn't have been really possible, you know, 10, 12 years ago. And that's been super exciting for us. And I think I'm grateful for my education and the people that I've met there and what I've learned, but I don't think you have to go to Harvard Business School to be an entrepreneur.
So what's your message to the listeners of this show, many of whom are designers, front-end developers, UX folks?
Yeah.
What's your message to them?
So let me give a bit of context. You know, one of the things that we've seen is just fewer, specifically designers, jumping into the entrepreneurial pool. And if the reason is like, I just want to design and that's all I want to do, then that's totally fine. And I don't encourage people to be entrepreneurs that don't want to be. That's not my goal. But a lot of times what we hear from people is, there's so much I don't know, or I don't know anything about this side of it or this side of it. And we hear that a lot from designers. Whereas like when we talk to engineers, a lot of times or people on the product and business side, they'll say like, yeah, I don't know this, but I'll figure it out or I'll find someone, et cetera. And I think it's sort of, I don't know if it's not thought about or not explained or not understood, but by designers, I think the biggest thing I want to say is like, you don't need to know all that stuff yourself. You won't. No one does. And that's okay. And that's one of the reasons we exist. You know, we'd obviously love to see you on founder dating, but even if it's not that, like, I'm sure that they already have side projects and entrepreneurial endeavors, you know, sitting in Dribbble or Behance, et cetera. And, you know, just encourage you to understand that it's okay that you don't know everything. No one does. And no one expects you to. And actually take the leap to at least not just right into I'm an entrepreneur, but to start meeting people and doing side projects together and, you know, seeing stuff become live and see if you have the appetite for, you know, entrepreneurship. And, you know, it's a small step, but I think it really is interesting. And it's one of the things that we found designers saying the most, which is like, oh, I feel like I need to learn more, or I need to understand more, et cetera. And no entrepreneur knows everything, you know, before they go right. in or they
you
want to do it.
Learn by doing.
Exactly.
Right.
And so I think that that's a big theme that, you know, we saw with designers. And then the other thing is, you know, and Jeffrey did a blog interview on the Founder Dating blog. And one of the things that we talked about is design is really sort of in an agency type role for a long time. And people have that mindset. And, you know, I would just encourage you to take yourself out of that mindset that it's just sort of like on the side for companies. Design is a really important piece of all companies, and you know, don't just think of yourself as a contractor or an agent.
I agree, and I'm always saying it to designers, developers, that we're mainly hired for the way we can think. I don't want someone to go off and execute my idea. I want them to improve it, and right. that's true of every working relationship I have. Right. Otherwise, I would go into a restaurant and say, make me a cheese sandwich the way I would make right. myself one. What's the sense in that? So designers, developers, if you're frustrated at your job and you are treated like a functionary, like the nerd in the corner who makes the stuff run, but nobody mm-hmm. really is interested in your ideas, a side mm-hmm. project is a great way to explore your passion and maybe turn into a business that can support you and your family.
Yeah. Yeah, and maybe and maybe not. A side project is a great way also because there's a little less pressure on you to say like, okay, everything is all in right now. And it's also an amazing opportunity for you to learn about somebody else and what you want in a co-founder or an advisor that's helping you or something like that. You learn so, so, so much. So my big thing is like, if you have side projects, try to do them with other people. I think a lot of people do side projects on their own and that's such a mistake.
Her name is Jessica Alter. She's Jalter, J. Alter on the Twitters. The site is founderdating.com. Jessica, yep. thank you for your time today. You were great.
Thanks so
and
much.
Pleasure.
Pleasure.
Okay. See you soon on another Big Web Show. Bye-bye.